I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome once again to another episode of the Ruler Magazine Tech Podcast. I am your host, Dan Cavallari, and I am coming at you from Colorado. And my guest today is also in Colorado, though we are still talking remotely, even though he's just up the road from me in Boulder. I am speaking today with Cameron Fraser, who is the composite engineer for Driven Technologies. Cameron, how's it going today?
Good. Another beautiful fall day in Colorado.
Oh, we're so close, aren't we? We're like right on the cusp of actual fall.
Yeah.
Cameron, I'm speaking to you today because I wanted to talk a little bit about carbon. And I know that's a broad topic for everybody listening, and it's going to have a point in a moment. But basically, carbon frames in general have become so advanced, so light, so strong. And, you know, that's interesting to me because I've been around long enough to remember when, you know, carbon was sort of the new material, and we hadn't quite figured out, you know, carbon manufacturing to the point where frames were super reliable and things like that. And in the early days, if you cracked your frame, you were out of luck. That was the end of your frame. More recently, it seems that carbon repair has become, you know, more accepted. You'll still void a warranty, I think, if you go that route. But carbon repair is now something that's actually a viable option. So it just occurred to me that, you know, now that we're in the realm of carbon everything, what changed exactly? And how did carbon repair become more accepted? So to get at that, I want to talk to you, Cameron, about carbon in general. And the reason I'm speaking with you is because, well, you happen to know a thing or two about carbon. For those of you listening, Cameron has a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and a master's in composite manufacturing. And before you entered the bike world, you were working with BMW on things like their carbon fiber roofs. You worked with the New Zealand Defense Force to create a manufacturing process for a 10-foot wingspan UAV. I don't even know what a UAV is.
So unmanned aerial vehicle or a drone is what they, you know.
I gotcha. All right, so a big old drone.
Yep.
And you've
reconnaissance
also
reconnaissance only. Okay. We're peaceful people.
And you've also worked in the bike industry for quite a while, working with various bike brands on design. You are co-owner of Broken Carbon, which is a frame repair business with Brady Capius. You've done a lot of frame repair, So you seem to have a lot of interest and experience in this particular realm. So let's start basic. Talk a little bit about carbon structure and when a carbon frame breaks, what exactly is happening to that carbon structure?
In the market, especially in road or mountain bike, you have two main frame bases, which is your aluminium alloy and your carbon fiber. What you typically see aluminium fail in is fatigue, particularly around the welds. One of the more common spots is between the chainstay and the bottom bracket. In carbon, you're highly unlikely to ever see a fatigue failure. In fact, I would say in a modern carbon epoxy laminate, you're in the millions of cycles before you'll see a fatigue failure. And what that means for a bicycle is basically never. So the types of failures that you'll see or we see predominantly are impact or accidental related. Carbon is It's definitely a bit of a black magic, even to people who are as experienced as me. You can never predict exactly the way it's going to fail, but it does fail in repeatable ways, or at least in the ways that we describe them, where we have a common language for how carbon fails. So what most people might have seen at some point is a broken carbon fiber laminate where you see kind of loose fibers, and it just looks like a crack, right? There's no other way to describe it. What you see there is actually the easy part of the damage, or the easy part to understand as well as the easy part to identify. What's difficult about carbon, because it has layers, it's actually weakest between the layers. And so as you go through the thickness of carbon fiber, you've got a strong carbon epoxy layer, and then you've got just epoxy. And then you've got another strong carbon epoxy layer, and so on. And so between those strong layers, you have the epoxy. And to give an order of magnitude, carbon fiber can be in the hundreds of gigapascals stiff, whereas the matrix or the epoxy is more in the tens of gigapascals. So it's at least a full order of magnitude. Depending on your laminate, it can be two orders of magnitude in difference. So what that means very specifically is in pretty much all impact damage, you get what's called a delamination failure, which is you've got two stiff carbon layers that don't want to move, and then that epoxy that's between them fails. This is in part where someone might not be aware that they have carbon damage. This is damage that's essentially unseen to the eye. So there's that obvious crack that we talked about, but you can actually get delamination failure of a laminate that doesn't have a top surface crack.
So that's interesting. So let's just recap briefly. So carbon does not fatigue. It's not a fatigue failure.
Not in bicycles, not in the real world.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, I should have been more specific. Aluminum will fatigue, and that's the failure. That's like me riding a bike. I fatigue and then I fail. But the carbon...
Me too.
So the carbon is layers, and I think that's an important notion for people. Even though the tubing is quite thin that we conceive of as a bicycle tube, it's layers, and the carbon is actually quite strong. It's the laminate, the epoxies in between where you're more likely to experience a failure. Is that correct?
Yes, in what we call these thin-skinned or thin-walled tubes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, from there, assuming that it's those layers in between that are leading to failures, has there been progress in that world over the last, 10 years to help prevent those sort of, that delamination problem?
Yes. So you might have heard there was a big hoopla about carbon nanotubes a few years ago. That was in an attempt to toughen the epoxy. It didn't really go anywhere, but it was mostly because manufacturing carbon nanotubes is quite difficult. But funnily enough, that is it's changed now, where there's actually some new processes. But up until this point today, the focus has been on the chemistry of the epoxy. Most of the developments, of course, are in the aerospace industry. But I'd say in the last 20 years, really, carbon fiber itself, the fiber, is unchanged. All of the technology and engineering and development have gone to the matrices or the epoxies. And we've seen several leaps in toughness, basically. And this is where there can be, I would say, a fair amount of confusion when someone's buying a bicycle frame. There was a big push for high stiffness. So some things you might have heard thrown around were like T700, T800, T900. those are essentially grades of carbon fiber that have a certain stiffness. And the industry as a whole tried to move towards very stiff, very strong, but not tough. That's what you saw probably about 5 to 10 years ago, and the industry's coming back. So instead of going to those hyper stiff carbons, the T900s, the industry is actually coming back down to T700 in combination with a tougher epoxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an interesting note because actually just yesterday, Cervelo launched a new bike, a new R5, and one of the key talking points there is that it's less stiff than the previous version. Do you suspect that's why? I mean, is this more of a strength play for them?
So yeah, so there's two reasons you would go to lower stiffness. Is it does give better impact resistance, but it also gives a better ride. So something that I think particularly I remember Trek running into, they were manufacturing super stiff seat stays, and the stiffer that seat stay, then the firmer the ride. We see a move away from that high stiffness for comfort as well.
Yeah, yeah. Now we're going to talk in a moment about repairing carbon, but before we do that, we mentioned at the top of the show that you are a composite engineer for Driven Technologies. What exactly are you doing? What is Driven Technologies, and what are you doing for Driven Technologies that carbon would actually come into play about?
Yeah, so Driven is a new company that spawned out of Ceramic Speed. People over the last couple of years have probably seen a YouTube video or some type of press coverage relating to a drive shaft driven bicycle. So I've been helping the guys at Driven back then it was Ceramic Speed for about 3 years now. All the frames up until this point have had to be modified. The chainstays have had to be elevated. So the drive shaft is essentially going where the chainstay was, but then of course you still need that structural member. So helps them with that. And now I'm helping them again. They got funding. They went out for a round of funding and then they branched out as their own company. They're going to bring that drive shaft that I'm assuming most of your viewers have seen to market.
Cool. And so is that drive shaft, I mean, is that also, it's a carbon fiber drive shaft, isn't it?
Yep, that's correct.
And so what went into, I mean, does the construction of that differ from a typical tube on a bicycle? I mean, what kind of engineering went into developing that shaft?
Yeah, so drive shafts take different loads, predominantly torsion. So when it comes to composites or carbon fiber, what you're doing there is you're orienting the fiber direction to the load. So what you'll see, for example, in a seat stay, you'll see predominantly longitudinal fibers that are taking, you know, the weight of the rider as well as, you know, impacts from the road. And so those are fibers that are going in the direction of the tube. But when you get to a drive shaft, any fiber that's going down the tube actually doesn't allow you to transfer torque. So you're looking at predominantly 45 degrees, for example, in a drive shaft. So, and that's what's so great about, you know, carbon fiber and composites in general, is you can put the strength where you need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm curious too, I mean, when it comes to the notion of repair, which we're going to talk about specifically frame repair in a moment, you know, we haven't even talked about things like carbon wheel repair. Is that even a thing? And what, you know, what kinds of shapes or components are, you know, conducive to repair and which ones aren't? You know, and like I said, we're going to talk specifically about frames in a moment, but is it even possible to fix, for example, the carbon drive shaft on this driven drivetrain or even a wheel?
When it comes to carbon fiber, especially in bicycles, I would say anything is repairable. It comes down to what's the cost of repair? Is it viable? So when you look at wheels, for example, a sidewall impact can be economically viable, but once you start getting into the rim bed, reproducing the structure of the rim bed. So an example would be, you don't have the original mold, So if you want to repair that rim bed, you're going to need to, like today, 3D print that rim bed yourself as a repairer and use that as your mold surface. And so when you look at that whole process, it ends up being usually either the same cost or even cheaper, especially with crash replacement pricing, to just get a new rim.
Gotcha. So, simple shapes matter.
Yes, I'd say simple shapes matter to an extent, but it also just comes down to the economics. So an example is dropouts are not, I wouldn't necessarily call them simple shapes. But when you're looking at, you know, a $2,000 replacement versus a $600 dropout repair, then it starts to make sense. But today, it's very common for you to be able to get a crash replacement wheel, the rim, for $300 or $400, right? So complexity, there is no limit to the complexity. It's just, it doesn't make sense for the customer.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I want to talk specifically about the carbon repair process and how, as a consumer, aside from price, how you should determine, in addition to price, I should say, how you should determine whether you should get your carbon frame repaired or if it's destined for the junk heap or you just want to go ahead and get it warrantied. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Why, hello there. Podcast interruption alert, but I will only take a few short moments to say that if you're enjoying this podcast, you will love the regular magazine. So if you're not a reader already, then you can subscribe at ruler.cc for as little as £6 per month. If you don't speak Northern Irish, that's 6 times 100 pennies. And for the price of a few coffees, you get regular columns from the wonderful Ned Bolting, myself, Orla Shinawy, and some of the very finest independent cycling journalism there is, all wrapped up in a wondrously beautiful publication. Go to ruler.cc. I'll leave you to it.
Thanks, Orla. I'm Ian Parkinson from the Ruler Conversations podcast, and I'm here to tell you that subscribers get 10% off tickets to the best cycling show in the world, Ruler Live, which returns to London from November the 4th to the 6th, with a great selection of top brands, bikes and guests, including Anna van der Breggen, Geraint Thomas, Romain Bardet, Marcel Kittel, Fabian Cancellara, Imogen Cotta, Matt Stevens, Ned Bolting, and, from the legendary Italian bike brand, Fausto Pinarello. Search Ruler Live online for tickets.
So my name is Oren Peleg and I'm an investor in Lekker. Three things that really caught my eye. The first one is they're looking to change the insurance industry, which is a very large industry and I think needs change. The second thing is I'm deeply passionate about getting people on two wheel. We need to address our congestion and pollution crisis, and I believe that two wheels have a massive role to play in that. And the third thing is, I can see a growing trend around companies building on the strong communities that they have, and I think Lekker's business model in the way they tap into the community of cyclists is something that's very much on trend at the moment.
We are back with the Ruler Tech Podcast. I am your host, Dan Cavallari, and I am speaking with Cameron Fraser, composite engineer for Driven Technologies. And Cameron, as we mentioned earlier, you've repaired quite a few carbon frames yourself. I think it was in the thousands you've done. So let's start, before we talk about the process, talk about, as a consumer, when should I be considering carbon repair versus, you know, getting rid of my frame altogether or basically trying to get it warrantied?
You should always pursue warranty options. And the reason I say that is you as a general consumer, sometimes, even if you know that it was an impact damage, the manufacturer might know something that you don't know. And an example is if there's a manufacturing defect, usually it's repeatable, so that brand or that frame supplier will know that there's a potential void near the surface of that section of the bike, and if you have a light impact, it's going to look like it failed, but it's actually not, but the manufacturer is aware of it. And that might be a situation where that manufacturer or brand is happy to warranty, even though it was an impact damage. And then, of course, a lot of the times, people just don't know what happened. And they also, they're not educated enough to identify impact damage versus something that might be a responsibility of the brand. And so once you start the communication with that brand, they're going to give their opinions as to whether it can be warrantied or not. And then they're also going to provide crash replacement pricing. So you're always going to want that information. It's different for every brand. And that's what you can then do to make your decision when you come to repair is, you know, does it make financial sense to me? And I would say today it still makes a lot of sense. I mean, there are plenty of brands out there that the crash replacement is still, $2,000. And at Broken Carbon, the average cost of repair is about $300. And that's the structural repair. So even if you have multiple fractures on a frame, it still makes a lot of sense. Where we tend to guide people towards either really pursuing warranty or actually just buying a new frame, there's location of damage on the frame that it just makes sense to replace the frame, but also some people I'm going to come up with a way to describe them nicely. They're very particular about the appearance of the frame, and you know, if it's not a factory appearance, it's not good enough. And every time we'll guide that person towards a new frame just so that they're satisfied. No matter how good your paint is, you're never going to get a perfect match. It's just not going to happen. Now, you know, from a distance, it can look pretty good, but there's that customer that wants it perfect, right? Now, when it comes to locations of damage, what do we tend to guide people towards? I'll give you an example that is actually an easy repair, but we always tend to guide people to try and warranty or replace, and that's the BB shell. So if you have a press hit bearing that presses directly into the carbon fiber, we can repair that, but the chances of that being a continued problem or an issue that that you probably will never get full satisfaction on is high, and the reason is, and this is a topic of large debate, carbon fiber bottom brackets and their tolerances. But if you have a good brand and you have a manufacturer that is making a really good bottom bracket, there's no way a repair company can get that press fit as perfect as the original mold could. So while we can repair it and make it safe and make it structurally sound, is that person going to be happy for the rest of the life of that frame, or is it going to creak, right? And that's where we strive to make sure that person's as happy as they can be with their bicycle. And I know we kind of said it at the beginning, but a carbon fiber frame can last longer than your life, right? There's essentially no limit to the amount that you can ride it. It's just these unfortunate, impact related events that, typically lead to the situation that we're talking about. But if you take care of it, there's absolutely no reason, provided that, you don't want some type of geometry change, of course, there's no reason why you couldn't have one frame for your life.
Yeah, sure. So I guess that brings up a couple questions. I mean, one, it seems to go back to that notion that we already talked about, which is, simple shapes. Simple shapes seem to be the best things for carbon repair, whereas something complex like a bottom bracket shell that relies so heavily on tolerances, you wouldn't necessarily want to mess with that. But it's interesting because we've also talked in the past quite a lot about carbon fatigue, and how the carbon can fatigue over time, change the ride quality of the frame. And is that true?
No, I mean, And I'd be happy to, have this discussion with other people in the industry that have, you know, experience like mine. Not only does my education tell me that's not a thing, also my real world experience tells me that's not a thing. I mean, I've been in front of testing machines that we've literally, like, the machine died before the frame died.
Okay.
I do not believe that to be a real thing.
Okay. All right. So now we've determined that basically the process should be always approach the brand first to see if it's a warranty issue. If it's a complex shape like a bottom bracket shell, you're probably going to want to err toward replacing that with a warranty. And if that's not possible, is it time to basically retire the frame?
It depends on how frugal the individual is, or mm-hmm. or right now it's really hard to get anything.
So
we're doing a lot of what I'd call desperation fixes.
Yeah.
nothing that I'd be worried about the safety.
Yeah.
Because if there's any safety concern, of course we always turn it away.
Yeah.
But I'll give you an example where you can make that customer potentially happy with a little bit of extra cost. So let's say we do that bottom bracket repair and we know we didn't get the perfect tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we supply them also Wheels Manufacturing Thread Together BB,
mm-hmm.
right? And we set them up as best as we can, but we also make sure that they're aware that there could be limitations with what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit higher cost, and maybe that brings the repair up a few hundred dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe pre-COVID, the decision for them was new frame, but right now where there's no frames,
right,
it's typically they're willing to live with some form of dissatisfaction just to keep riding.
Get me through the season. Desperation fixes. I like that. That perfectly summarizes my approach to training. I like that. So let's hop into the process. So somebody comes to you, they've gone through those steps, and they, you know, warranty's off the table. They need their frame fixed. What does the process look like once you get that frame in your hands?
Yeah, so at Broken Carbon, we do things maybe a little bit differently than other repair shops. We have our opinions, they have their opinions. It's usually not worth ultrasounding or performing what we'd call a non-destructive test. Maybe it's for a different podcast or a different session. We can go into why ultrasound leads to a lot of what I'd call false signals, and it's not representative of the true health of the frame. And again, I could talk about that for hours, so I'll skip over that for now. With our experience, we have several investigative techniques. But what's surprising that I really don't hear anyone talk about, the bike, it makes it pretty clear that it's broken. The likelihood of someone out there riding a broken frame and they don't know about it is very, very low. Now we see it because you can actually see how the damage grows as someone continues to ride it. And we've seen fractured frames that people have ridden for thousands of miles, and you can see how that delamination creeps between those layers. But for the most part, it's such a brittle failure. It is so obvious. The little tiny, very hard to see paint cracks that get brought to us, and it's like, well, is this the broken carbon? Is this the paint? 99.99999% of time, if you have a hairline crack in the paint, it's just the paint. You will almost certainly know when it breaks or if it's broken. But we're also happy to help show you and make you feel better about that. So anyway, the frame comes in, we look at the obvious damage that the person is coming in for. We give the whole frame a look over. make sure that there's nothing else that stands out, just so that that customer doesn't get a shock when they come to pick up their bike. That if, in case there's other areas, you know, we can identify those and we can talk about those. Sometimes with particular types of accidents, they'll come in and they'll show us a piece of damage, and we'll query them about how that damage happened. Thankfully, people aren't afraid to tell stories. So an example where you might see like a down tube crack, someone comes in and you're like, okay, yeah, what happened? And like, well, I drove into my garage. You're like, so then at Broken Carbon, that's an immediate turn away. And that's specifically because when you drive into the garage and it hits the seat, that's fine. I'm happy from a safety perspective to repair those, because we can check that top tube, seat stay, junction really well, and then you can get cracking down at the BB area as well. But when it comes to a handlebar to the top of the garage or head tube to the top of the garage, what can happen is you'll get a small amount of delamination between the carbon headset race bearing seat, I should say, not race, but bearing seat. And the absolute last thing, I'm never going to, you know, help anyone get into a position where their head tube bearing seats shear when they hit a pothole, right? Now, in rare occasions, you can see that happen on a healthy frame in a really hard impact. So something that could have been compromised, that's where it's like, you know, this is just not worth your life.
Sure, sure.
And that's an immediate turn away.
Yeah. So don't drive your bike into the garage.
which I've actually done.
Yeah, so. A lot of people have. I think that's probably pretty common. Luckily, my bikes are on the back of my truck.
Yeah.
So you've done your inspections.
So we get the story. So I'm sorry, we get the story.
Yep.
We get the story. We check it out. And right now, you know, there's a longer turnaround than there's ever been. Just because, you know, people are doing as many, this is the most, you know, repairs that we've been doing. We give them a timeline. When we get into the repair, usually there's no major surprises. Sometimes we can find something really odd underneath the surface that might make us consider turning the repair away. That's usually extremely rare. And just to give an idea, I mean, once we've identified that we believe that the repair will be safe before we even get our hands on it, we probably turn away like 1 in 500. So like something under the surface where we found where that particular factory or brand has put something inside the frame that isn't conducive to a safe repair. So it's very, very rare, but it happens. So we go through that process, and I can talk about, you know, at a high level what the actual process is if you'd like, and then the customer comes and picks up their bike. At right now, especially with the turnaround, we're doing almost purely clear coat repairs. So paint, depending on how good you are, paint can add another couple weeks. And so right now, we're doing almost all just clear coat. So that's where you can actually see the repair, but clear coats, and clear coat comes with all of our repairs. It's an important protection because there's very few things that damage carbon from an environmental standpoint. They're highly acid resistant in the grand scheme of things. I mean, epoxy is, in the plastics world, it's highly resistant. It's not highly resistant compared to a metal frame. I don't want to have any misconception there. But one thing that it is very sensitive to is ultraviolet. So we would never let a repair go out that hasn't been clear coated and protected from ultraviolet.
Right. So just in the few minutes we have left, the actual process is done by hand, correct? So it's actually wrapping sheets of carbon fiber around the damaged area.
Yep. So depending on the extent of the damage, just we have what we call patches or wraps. If the fracture's roughly speaking, about half the tube, half the circumference of the tube, then we'll, from a structural standpoint, we'll go to a full wrap, but it's biased, so we don't need to put the same amount of material on both sides, right? It's tailored to the damage and tailored to the frame. So we do a wrap purely because it's economical. Where once you get to that certain point, it just makes sense to just do the whole tube. But if it's a smaller amount of damage than that, then we do a patch where mm-hmm. it's a local area.
Yeah. And once the frame is fixed and repaired, is there a compromise to the strength, the integrity of the frame from now on, or is it just as strong as it was before the patch?
So short answer is our repairs, I would say, are as strong, potentially a little bit stronger. And this is another topic that I could talk about for hours, as you know. There's something that's really important that I don't hear anyone talking about. There's two kinds of repairs, and I think the customer should be aware of that. At Broken Carbon, we only do one of the kinds, which is to try and get original strength. But what's most common, for example, in aerospace, is not to achieve original strength. It's actually to get to make the final structure a little bit weaker. And the reason is because they're driving the repair to what's called original stiffness. So if you think about a wing spar, you can't have both of your wings flexing different amounts, right? Because the airplane will start to roll. So what you'll see out there, people who there's repair companies, and I don't fault them at all. I just fault the education. There's companies out there that they have these beautiful repairs, but they're what I would call flush repairs, which means that the final surface of the repair is flush with the frame. That cannot, especially with this thinness of tube, that cannot achieve original strength. But it is achieving original stiffness. Now, my opinion is the slight stiffness increase to achieve original strength, you don't notice as a rider. So why wouldn't you? And again, you know, we just happen to be more safety driven than maybe cosmetic driven. Why wouldn't you go for original strength when all it takes is an extra layer or two? And yeah, okay, you know, it's not a perfect circular tube anymore because you added an extra layer or two. But you know, these people here in Boulder, you know, they come down the canyons at 50 miles an hour,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Original strength, in my opinion, is the right way.
Right. Yeah. I'm okay with a little bit more strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cameron, thank you very much for chatting today. I'm sure we could talk endlessly about this and do, you know, 10 more episodes just on carbon and carbon repair. But I do appreciate your expertise here. And before I let you go, where can people find Driven Technologies on social media?
I don't know if they've spun up their Instagram, but the website is definitely up, driven.bike. And I'll pester them about getting all their social media up. Right now, as a company, with my help, they're focused on really the R&D side and making sure that the product that they come out with is as good and as polished as it can be. So I think they might actually intentionally be keeping things a little bit low right now, ready for, you know, when they're to do the big unveil of the commercial product.
Sure, sure. So keep an eye out for that in the near future, I would say. And if you have questions about what we chatted about today, feel free to reach out to me on social media at Brown Tie Dan. And of course, you can reach out to Ruler Magazine at Ruler Magazine. I am primarily on the Instagrams and the Twitters and Ruler as well. But if you have questions, please do reach out. If you have suggestions for topics you'd like me to cover on a future tech podcast episode, I would love to hear it. Cameron, thanks again for joining me today. That was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
And for those of you listening, we will catch you on the next episode of the Ruler Tech Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.